Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerdy stuff way too much. Joining us today as our special guest is Zach Pope. Zach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Excited to be on here. Like listening to your guys' podcast. Now I'm here to get to talk some movies with you guys. So thanks for having me, guys.
So he was actually supposed to join us 2 months ago. I don't know if I even told him this, but he was going to be in Austin for South by Southwest, a film festival that, like everything else, was canceled. And that was actually the first symbol to me that, like, wait, the world's about to shut down is when South by Southwest got canceled. But so we were actually going to share a little house in downtown Austin, go to this film festival. So we were going to do a live in-person version of the podcast, which, you know, every time I've done these with Griffin, we were, 1,000 miles apart doing this over the internet. So it's going to be fun to, like, sit there, mics in a room, doing it normal fashion. And then the world shut down. And so led to a 2 month delay as I figured out some technology and how to do everything. But Zach, I'm glad that you can finally join us for today's podcast. And joining us, as always, is Griffin. Griffin, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I promise that I'm not going to rant about Robert Pattinson not working out because we all know it's a joke. And people just want to take statements like that and run with it. That's cool.
Well, we will have some fun with that one because the YouTube this morning lit up with a bunch of editorials about everything that he said about that stuff. So it should be very interesting to see where that one goes. So today we've got a whole bunch of subjects to discuss. First off, Robert Pattinson says some very controversial statements about his workout plan, as well as Andy Serkis saying this is going to be a dark film. We got a little bit of news about sort of the direction we think that they're going with the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie. We got a couple more updates on some casting for season 2 of The Mandalorian. The creator of Deadpool had some less than positive things to say about the potential future films. And then we got a little bit of an update on Avatar 2. So we will talk about Avatar 2 and our thoughts on that film. If you're listening to the audio version of this is being streamed live. You can check that out normally Tuesdays or Wednesdays when we stream it live. So occasionally we will be taking some chats from the comment section to give it a little bit of a community vibe in here. And if you are listening on one of the podcast sites, be sure to leave a review, a rating, all of that fun stuff. And if you're watching live right now as we're streaming, click that like button, leave some sort of comment in the chat telling us where you're at right now. It's always fun to see where everyone is coming from, that we get to talk movies with people all over the globe when we do these deals. But with that said, let's go ahead and dive into this with our first topic of the day. And we'll be talking about the Batman right off the bat. This week, Andy Serkis did a little interview where he mentioned that this is like the darkest Batman. Like, he put these comments out there. Not nothing specific, but just mentioned that this is looking to be a very dark Batman film. So, Zach, what do you make of Andy Serkis's comments about this being a dark Batman film?
Well, I feel like every time there's a new Batman film coming out, they always say it's the darkest one yet or something. But I think even from that, like, initial tease of the suit, we're already kind of getting that vibe. This is going to be a very different tone of a Batman that we've gotten before. And I think from what we've seen Matt Reeves do before, we've seen dark. I mean, the last two Planet of the Apes films are pretty emotional. And I think we're going to get that in this Batman film, which makes me really excited to see what we can do. I mean, this is my most anticipated film for the next 2 years. Like, if I could only see one film for 2 years, it would be this Batman film. I'm so hyped out of my mind. And I mean, hearing Andy Serkis talk about this, the fact that he is Alfred makes me even more excited to see what he can do in this role. So I'm overall just excited. Every little bit of it I get, I just get psyched out of my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you mentioned in there, if you just look at the tone of the last two Planet of the Apes movies, what do you expect from that guy doing a Batman film? And it's exactly what I would want to hear those types of comments about it. Griffin, how about you? What do you make of these comments?
I really no surprise here. Of course, it's going to be dark. It's Batman. Batman sells when it's dark. We're not living in the 60s or even the 80s anymore. Like, we like our Batman to be grounded in reality, and to be like a more mature character exploration. That's just kind of where we're at now with the character. And you know, I think it's all the better for it too. Like, I think the more interesting stories are those when, like, we treat the character as a real person. And so just like hearing that, you know, Matt Reeves is doing that, of course, tracks with his previous work, but also, like, you know, it gets me more excited for sure. But again, like, the fact that, like, the Batman is going to be, like, really dark, going to be it's going to go there. That doesn't surprise me. And it definitely makes sense why someone like Robert Pattinson would probably sign on to be Batman. Because, like, if they're going to go there and they're going to really explore, like, the psyche of this character, given his traumatic past, I think, like, it's going to be probably one of the more mature versions of the character we've gotten so far. So, yeah, I don't know. Looking forward to it, but I can't say I'm too surprised by the comments.
Right. And, you know, it's a character that lends itself to darkness. He's the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
When you go lighthearted, it doesn't make sense anymore. If you read the comics in the 60s, it matched the tone of the 60s Batman. And then as the comics have gotten darker, and that's all they've really done since the 70s, and they've maintained that tone, that's really what people want from the character. It just doesn't make sense for anything else. Now, the slight concern I have is if we just did Punisher Batman with machine guns mowing guys down and branding people, and in the context of that, then someone saying we're going even darker, I go, and I don't want to read too much into that. There's a slight side to me that's like, okay, I want to make sure that this isn't entirely just turned into he's a sociopath.
And,
but that's, you know, taking a comment that he made that he's not having that thought that I just thought as he said it. He's just saying, no, this is a serious dark version of the character. Very much appreciate that we're getting that, and they're continuing to, they're not trying to lighten him up. They're not trying to Marvelify Batman. They're going, no, he's the great detective born out of trauma. Let's take that seriously.
Yeah. And I'll say this, like, while they say they're going to be going dark with it, I think there's a way that you can, like, I think the stuff in the Snyderverse is like a thing of the past. Like, as much as I enjoyed that interpretation of Batman, you can only do that interpretation of Batman once. And like at a certain point in his life where he's like basically the Punisher. If you consider, like, taking into account that this is him at the beginning of his career, I think we will explore a little bit more of like his psyche. Mm-hmm. And like, I think, probably more so than any other interpretation, this one will kind of lean more into the fact that while he's a vigilante and he's ultimately a good person, he is a little bit of a psycho in some regards. You know, like, there's something not quite right with him, obviously, if he's going to dress up as a bat and, like, terrorize criminals. So, like, I can see them taking that and you know, getting dark on a different sort of level than like what Snyder did, which was more of like a physical, just like, you know, like you said, like a Punisher, just like no humanity at all sort of level. This feels a little bit different, you know, in that regard.
Well, and I think even with a darker thing, I think a lot of it is going to go down to the more of the story. I think that's what they're most talking about. Cause I feel like from what I understand and everything that's kind of going about, it looks like they're adapting Long Halloween. Or like an interpretation of that, which is a pretty dark story. So I think, and it looks like Matt Reeves has said that it's going to be a detective type story. Detective stories can be very dark at times. So if this kind of comes out to be more of a Batman mixed with a crime noir, I'm kind of all for that because I don't think we've ever actually gotten that in any of the Batman films yet. Maybe some in the animation, but nothing really particularly in the live action. So I think that's what gets me really excited. I think the big question is, does he get the white eyes?
It's true.
I don't know. Yeah, that is the big question.
I don't know, man, if that translates. I just live action, if it looks a little bit too weird. But that's, if you want like a threefer of graphic novels that are great little early Batman touches on a bunch of different elements for him, you do Batman Year One, you do Long Halloween, and you do Dark Victory.
Yeah.
Really nice little run. Had a super chat come in from Revan's Flicks and Games. Thank you so much. He said, hey, Sean, hope you're doing okay. I have my fingers crossed for this Batman film. I plan to review the past films before this one. What about you? Yes, leading up to the new Batman, I will review all of the Batman films. I don't know exactly what it'll look like because I'm looking to review all the Nolan films leading up to done it as well. So I don't think I'll double them up, but that's absolutely in the works as I plan to review all of them next year leading up to it. You know, I don't really even have fingers crossed too much on it. I have a hard time thinking that this one would be bad.
I know. Henry
is just such a good pick for it. Like if you just removed the fact that I had anticipation for Ben Affleck and you just asked me, who do you think would be really good to do a Batman movie? He would have been in my top three. He might have been my number one, especially at the time, right off of War of the Planet of the Apes. Tonally, I think it just makes a lot of sense. So, but on that note, we'll move on to our next one where there is some controversy with this film. And Robert Pattinson said some quotes to say about what he's doing during quarantine. He said, I think if you're working out all the time, speaking of actors for parts, you're part of the problem. You set a precedent. No one was doing this in the 1970s. Even James Dean, he wasn't exactly ripped. And then speaking of his time on Twilight, the one time they told me to take my shirt off, I think they told me to put it back on again. So some people are taking these comments and putting a whole narrative together on it. And to be fair, that's in the nature of the era we're in. And as long as he's been in this, he should be well aware of the way that people love to take a quote and turn it into a fun headline that gets people to click, read, all of that fun stuff. And but at face value, if you take it as serious comments, him saying essentially what he's saying there, if serious, and I know, Griffin, you'll have some thoughts on that, that he's saying that, hey, these actors that are just creating these unbelievable physiques, that's a new trend. They didn't do that back in the 70s and before. So during quarantine, no, I'm not working out all the time because, you know, I don't want to set a dangerous precedent for people. And then he ties it back to James Dean, which that's kind of the clue that there's only two options here. He's kind of an idiot or he's joking. Because he's like that time James Dean played an action hero. Like it doesn't make any sense. Like he references the 70s and an actor that died in the, you know, the 50s. So people taking this too seriously, it's like, really read the comments. It doesn't seem like the headlines are the real story here. Griffin, I know you have some opinions on this one. What do you think about this?
This is news. Like I mean, I guess, you know, given the state of the world right now, of course this is news, but like this would probably even be news if the world wasn't in shambles right now. I just don't understand. Like people don't know how to like read people or read comments. Like, okay, take two things into account. One, he's British, so he has a very dry sense of humor innately. Two, Robert Pattinson is an incredibly just dry and sarcastic individual regularly. He doesn't take anything like interviews, especially that seriously. He takes his acting seriously and he takes his role seriously and he has fun with it. But like press, I mean, just go watch his interviews on the Twilight Junkets. He just blatantly states that he hated making those movies while he was making those movies. So he's just being cheeky. Like I don't understand like why anyone would get up in arms about the fact that Robert Pattinson is sitting at home in quarantine and saying, you know, why should Batman have to work out? You know, there were just actors who didn't, you know, we didn't used to have to work out. Now we all have to. And so it's like, I think there is actually kind of a point to be made about that. I mean, obviously I feel like cinema as a whole, as a medium has evolved since like the 50s or whatever. But it is kind of like an interesting like thing to acknowledge where it's like, oh yeah, I guess actors, they didn't really have to, you know, get into this like insane shape in order to play these roles.
John Wayne, the classic Western tough guy, you know, today you'd like, look at this overweight guy who's just running around acting like a tough guy. You know, things have changed just a little bit.
Well, yeah, it's like exactly. Even look at Michael Keaton. Did Michael Keaton? I don't remember Michael Keaton ever taking off his shirt in a Batman film and being like, "Oh God, this is really cool." Like the whole Ben Affleck montage sequence from Batman v Superman. I dig it, but like, is it needed in the film at all? No.
Seeing Ben Affleck shirtless is definitely not necessary.
That's where we differ. That is where we differ. That's the section that I rewatched the most.
True. Yes, we all like seeing shirtless Ben Affleck.
Probably actually true because I watch a lot of montages while working out myself. So
is that one of your motivational? Is that one of your most
Rocky IV, Batman v Superman CrossFit sequence?
Oh, see, there it goes.
Yeah. See,
I didn't even get this was news when you sent over the stuff that we were going to talk about. I had to look it up. I was like, "What is this? What is this?" So then I looked it up. And I'm like, "Okay, like." You know, he's just a very sarcastic. I mean, The Lighthouse is like the most sarcastic freaking film, like for me to like even look at, like for his sense of humor. So, I mean, I love Robert Pattinson. I love this casting as him as Batman. He doesn't need to be as big as Ben Affleck was or even Christian Bale. I mean, he just needs to be cut. And I'm sure he already is. You know what I mean?
I mean, he's already like, he might not have like insane muscle definition, but like he's already pretty lean. Like it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. What we should be focused on is the performance. Now obviously he's going to get to a place where he can look the part as well, but like, my god, people, relax. He's not spitting in the face of Batman fans. Like he took the role.
Was that obviously a reference to something in particular?
I have no comment on the matter, but like obviously purposefully you know, just trying to shit on everyone who loves the character. I don't think that like comments like that make it seem that way. He's just being cheeky. He's having fun. If you read that entire GQ piece on him, oh my god, it's hysterical. Just the stuff he's doing, how insane out of his mind he is. He's such an interesting person.
The photos were taken by him, right? The photos in that, they're taken by him. Yeah, that's what I was reading. I was like, I love him. I actually think he's like top 10 actors working today. Like, he is an incredible actor. And I mean, that's just part of the reason why I'm excited for him as Batman. But I think, I mean, he has the jaw. He has the jaw and the chin. Can we just be excited about that?
Yeah, I know.
I'll just put a little bit out there of I'm certainly, compared to you two, much more inclined to be like, I want to feel like Batman can beat me up. And so when I see a Batman and I go, I don't think that guy could beat me up in the 21st century, I think some of that stands out. When they're speaking of the word precedent that he used, that we're so used to these guys actually being the biggest guy in the room and committing to it, that if these were little statements, that's where people are like, what? Batman's so committed. What are you talking about? That I think there is value to Batman being a guy that's intimidating, and a Michael Keaton, 160-pound, 5'8" Batman would be weird in the year 2021.
Yeah.
And I think there's truth to that. I don't want to go too far down that path. And I don't like that's not going to stop me from really enjoying this movie. But all things considered, I prefer my Batman to be Ben Affleck size and for him to be this big hulking guy that can take everybody out. We had a super chat come in from Azim the Dream Reviews. He says, have you ever had a movie you know you can only watch so many times until you realize you need something new? In my case, I love The Dark Knight and Jurassic Park, but I really need a new Batman and Jurassic World Dominion, and also How to Chat One-on-One. So let's go with that first one. Is there comes to you guys that you watch so many times that you're like, I definitely need to watch something else?
Particularly not for me. I mean, I have like a set of movies that like I can always put on and it doesn't matter. I mean, there are some that I'm like, man, I would really like a sequel to this, but I will never get, like Tropic Thunder and Game Night. I would love something else in those world with those characters. Never gonna happen again. I know Quibi or whatever it's called, they're talking about doing a Les Grossman show on there, which they do, I'm all for it. But you know,
of course it would be on Quibi. Of course you know, get that on like a normal platform.
I know, not even the Peacock. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so when it comes to anything else, I mean, yeah, I would love, like, I mean, I want the new Batman. I want to see this new Jurassic World. I want the next Venom and stuff, but I'm always good with, like, if a film's really fun to rewatch, I can always keep rewatching it and having fun with it. I will say, though, after marathoning through all the Harry Potters, I really do want another Harry Potter series with those original characters. I mean, I don't care about the Fantastic Beasts films again. I just want to see Harry, Ron, and Hermione and see where they went afterwards.
Griffin, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he makes a good point about The Dark Knight, because that's not a movie that I can inherently just go back and rewatch and rewatch and rewatch, because it's like a really heavy piece. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's like a finite amount of times I can watch that movie, over the course of a year, before just saying, okay, I'm okay not seeing this for a little bit. Like every year I have my Nolan Batman trilogy sort of rewatch, and then that's the extent I rewatch those movies. But honestly, I could watch Harry Potter, like all seven or all eight of those movies, like over and over again.
Same.
And they don't really ever get tiring. I guess it's just because I enjoy being in that world so much. And then, like, obviously, you know, I'm a massive Bond fan. I never get tired of rewatching those films. And I think part of it is because there's so much variety. There's like 24 movies to choose from, so like you can go through and whatnot. He does make a good point with Jurassic Park, because I don't really ever go back to those films. But like, I don't know. Like, I think the qualifier for me is that, like, how, you know, is it a story that's like so serious and intense that it's just like, okay, I gotta kind of distance myself from that? Or is like the film is the series itself just like super long? Like each entry is like super long. Like Lord of the Rings, love those movies, but I will probably only watch those, the extended editions, once or twice a year, and like it'll bookend my year basically.
Yeah, for me, I can't think of any that are fall into that category that he mentioned like that, where it's I can only watch it so much. So I'll kind of continue on the other side to that. To your point, I'm normally for sequels. I'm normally for these types of worlds like Batman, Jurassic Park. There's more stories to tell with dinosaurs, with Batman. So I'm normally okay with like, let's just kind of keep putting some of these out there. Some people are like, oh, I'm just bored of Batman movies. I don't relate to that. I don't get bored of Spider-Man movies as long as we're kind of doing new and different stuff with it. Even when, you know, Griffin, I know that, you like Amazing Spider-Man 2 quite a bit. But even with that one, like, not really working for me, it didn't make me go, oh, I'm burned out on Spider-Man movies. It was like, okay, they did some different stuff that was interesting. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But you know, where I get, you know, sequeled out is the stuff where it's and don't want sequels. Ones where they are standalone stories that don't entirely make sense to tell, like, I don't know where you're going to go, so they force it, or a comedy where they're just rehashing it. Yeah. Those are the sequels that burn me up, rather than like these characters that there's so many different adventures to tell. You know, like Harry Potter, there's so many different things you can do with that group of people, that it's not tied to like them being at school. So totally open to some of those different ideas. And then the last little bit on here, since you asked how to have a one-on-one chat, kind of the way to do that, if you join on Patreon at the top tier, you can have a 30-minute chat with me. If you join at any level, you could get access to all the Q&A that I do each Saturday. It's normally about 90 minutes long. I answer everybody's questions. And then at $5, you can get your name on the end card. I put out a couple of extra videos on there every week. And then the top tier one is you can have a one-on-one chat with me. And those are fun because I actually get to know people a little better doing that. All right, moving along to our next one on here is that we had a little bit of a piece of news about the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie, that they're looking at Karen Gilliam to kind of take over as the lead in the franchise. There's not really clear if it's tied to the other one, if it's a full reboot, remake. Johnny Depp ties into it, but Karen Gilliam is the name that they are looking at for that. Zach, what do you think of this? What do you make of it?
Well, as the resident, I love Pirates of the Caribbean so much. Like, I literally have a giant Barbossa sword that sits in front of my TV. Like, I love Pirates of the Caribbean. I actually just rewatched the first three after this news came out. I remember when they said that they were looking for a redhead, I'm like, they're going to get Karen Gillan. It's obvious she's kind of the big redhead actress out there that would probably take this on. And I'm for it. I'm for it for more Pirates of the Caribbean. But I fully believe that this is a soft reboot. I fully believe that Johnny Depp in some way, shape or form will cameo at least in here. But I actually really do think we're still going to get a Pirate 6. It's more of a gut feeling from me, but I think it'd be kind of like, I just think when the news came out, so many people were so against her, not even her, but in general, a thought of a reboot without Johnny Depp. So I think Disney is going to look at that and see, we got to do something with him. And maybe this soft reboot, is her, but it also ties into how Pirates of the Caribbean 5 ended, and they're kind of continuing that story and then go forward, and this will be the last of Jack Sparrow. I mean, Jack Sparrow works best when he is a supporting character. So if exactly. you put Karen Gillan as the main character yeah. and then put him as the side character, I'm kind of all for that. As long as I still get more of that. But even if he doesn't show up, I'm still excited for it because I just love pirates and I want more in this world. I think there is a lot more to do in this world. Honestly, out of the five movies, the only one I don't like is 4. I think 4 is boring. It's really yeah. boring. And yeah. I know me and my girlfriend have kind of pushed off watching that next one because it is the boring one. Like, do we skip it? Do we just go to 5, which 5 is a little bit more fun? But nothing holds up to those first three. I mean, yeah. Gore Verbinski's directing is just so in there.
Mm-hmm. Throw this question out there to add on to what we're talking about. Joris Johnson says, Pirates without Johnny isn't pirates. Do you agree with that, Griffin?
I don't, because I don't think you need Jack Sparrow in order to do Pirates. Realistically, the Jack Sparrow, Elizabeth Swann, and Will Turner movies and that story should have just ended with 3. And then going on from there, they should have just, like, you know, kept making stories in the world, but, like, with different characters. I get that Jack Sparrow has become, like, this figure in pop culture that everyone loves. And listen, I absolutely adore Jack Sparrow, and I love seeing him in the movies. He's a lot of fun, and Johnny Depp owns the role. But kind of what you were saying, Zach, and what I've always maintained is that you go back to that first Pirates film, Jack Sparrow wasn't a bumbling idiot. Like, he was drunk 90% of the time, but he was kind of like, he was witty. There was, like, some cunning. He was cunning. There was, like, a good, not a good head, but, like, he had some brains to him. Whereas, like, in each of the films that followed, he became more and more of a caricature of himself. And I think it's that, you know, that line that he kind of walked on in the first film, where he kind of treaded the line between being, you know, a pirate and, like, a caricature of a pirate. That's what earned him an Academy Award nomination for the role. And
yeah.
exactly what Zach said, he excels as a side character, not the focus of the film. As you see in the fourth movie, he is the focus of the film, and it's not very good. Mm-hmm. So I think, I, you know, it's probably been 2 movies too late. Like, this has been a long time coming, obviously. Like, I enjoy 5, but it definitely does not hold a candle to the first 3 movies, yeah. which I think is an excellent trilogy. So, like, I'm perfectly okay with someone new taking over as the lead pirate. And if it is Karen Gillan, that is a brilliant choice. We've seen her in the Jumanji movies. She obviously has a knack for adventure films. And I just like to see new movies and new adventures in this universe, because even at the end of 5, it just felt like they were going to go retread themselves and bring back Davy Jones, and because they didn't really know what to do. And now it's like, okay, we've cut ties from those things. We're free to do whatever we want. Let's just have a good time being pirates. And so, like, I think this is definitely the best course of action for them going forward.
Yeah. I mean, that first movie, I loved it. Still love it. I rewatched it with my kids about a month ago, and they totally dug it too. I mean, they watched the whole thing, and it was pretty long. I'm a good bit older than each of you, so you guys actually grew up watching the movies, whereas I was already grown up when they came out. So I was a little bit more cynical towards 2 and 3. I had some issues with them. If rewatching them, I always still kind of have those issues. I respect what Gore was trying to do with 2 and 3 as tell this bigger, darker, epic pirate story. And then it seemed like they really kind of did lose their way with 4, and they're like, okay, let's just lean into Johnny Depp, and lost some of the magic of what kind of worked. Got a little bit of it back with the 5th one. But I think people that tie the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise just Johnny Depp, I think I get where some of that's coming from, but it's called Pirates of the Caribbean. And as all of us have said, all of us agree, he works best as a spice, not as the main focus. Like, he makes it better, but he makes the other thing. He makes the story better. He makes this amplifies what's there. And so but at the same time, you know, when we're getting to that point where it's going to be 20 years since the original one, that if it's not focused on him, And I prefer soft reboot, still in that same world, but down the road a little bit. And so his role's pretty minor. That's probably my preference, moving away from him. But it's just a fun world to tell pirate stories. Yeah. They came up with a fun tone with the swashbuckling ship battles, little supernatural ghost stuff in it. It's a little bit of a lot of different stuff. And that's what was so fun to watch with my kids, because it's a little bit of horror when they're their age, but it's also a big swashbuckling adventure, and it's also really funny. That's a lot of different things, and you can do a bunch of different stories with that, and it's not just tied to Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And it's that tone is what, like, he's what made that first one so classic, is that this Jack Sparrow character came out of nowhere and was so fun and interesting. But it's not the only thing that made that film work. And speaking of just Karen Gilliam, it's tough to know when they say that they're putting the focus on her, since we've seen her as a side character in a bunch of really great movies and done a great job. But as that lead character, that hook, that's what I think a little bit where people are pushing back. Like, you know what Jack Sparrow is, and you know what makes that really interesting. When you just say her, it's tough to say because, okay, we got Jumanji, we've got Nebula, we've got some Doctor Who, but it doesn't exactly tell you what to expect from her character in it. So it's like, do I like her as an actress? Yeah. Do I have an idea what that's going to mean? Not really. So in general, I'm always kind of optimistic for these Pirates of the Caribbean movies, because there's room to tell more. If we've only got one pirate franchise, it's not like it's played out. We've had five pirate movies in 20 years. In the scheme of things, that's not very many. So I'm always kind of optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, everything you said. And I think going to Karen's, I think they're going to take that redhead character from the ride. That's kind of like a big new thing, which was a controversy at the time too, when they added her to the ride. I think that's who Karen Gillan's going to end up playing, because they do adapt a lot of cool Easter eggs from the ride into especially into the first movie, in fact, and even into Dead Man's Chest and into At World's End. It's really cool how they're able to intersect those. So I'm just really overall curious. Who would you guys want to direct it? Like, do you guys have like a thought of who you'd like to see?
I honestly, and this is, people might disagree with me, I want Gore Verbinski to come back. I think he just understands this world and has a great hold on like how to make it pop and make it come alive. I think ultimately the issues with some of the latter films came down to writing, not necessarily directing. He directed the hell out of those first three films. Those are like epic swashbuckling adventure movies,
ambitious
for a generation. Like, I love his approach to pirates. So I'd love to see him come back. If not him, you know, Joe Johnston's not doing anything. For adventure movies. Yeah.
Disney will never make a franchise like Pirates again, though. Like, they will never have that ambitiousness. Like, I was thinking, like, of the last Maleficent that came out. I'm like, I could even see how this could be as ambitious as Pirates, but it just feels like just put through the machine to be made. Like, that's what it felt like.
I mean, like, it had all sorts of epic things in it, speaking of Maleficent 2, but it's also, like, 30 minutes shorter than it needs to be for this big, gigantic, epic plot that it was going for. But, yeah, some names that, I don't know, maybe this is a crazy one, but, and I don't know if he can do fun. Is it Mike Flanagan that did Dr. Sleep?
Yeah.
You think through, you know, Gore came from a horror background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if you've got someone that can do the creepy visuals and has like a real artistic style to it, if they can do fun, I think that's a nice combination. Or if you want to go in the fun direction, if you're talking to Karen Gilliam, get the, was it Kasdan, the Jumanji guy, but I don't know if he could do the scary side. Yeah. So I don't have one that immediately comes to mind as an obvious pick. I wouldn't hate it if Gore came back, if he said, hey, we want to get back to the first one and nine, make the most epic pirate double feature of all time. I could get excited for that. I just think with the second two, it just got too big, too ambitious, and it lost me a little bit in all the different ideas. And I'm in the process of rewatching them, so I haven't, maybe if I rewatch them this month or next month, I'll have a different take, but you know, I watched them a good number of times, and I always kind of come back to that same vibe when it comes to them. Okay, moving along, our next subject at hand. Got a couple of different pieces of news about The Mandalorian Season 2. First one is, I'm not quite sure how to say his name, but Temuera Morris is returning to play Boba Fett. Or he's not returning to play Boba Fett. I guess he's returning. He played Jango Fett. Boba Fett is a clone of Jango Fett, so he's returning to play Boba Fett for Season 2 of The Mandalorian. And then Katie Sackhoff is also coming into Mandalorian Season 2 to play Bo-Katan, a Mandalorian character from The Clone Wars, I believe Rebels as well. So we got a couple of different things that are, if you're into Star Wars lore, these are big pieces of announcement, big announcements. Zach, what do you make of each of these?
I almost like cried of excitement, like honestly, in anything of this, because I just love like this final season of Clone Wars. Like if you didn't watch the last four episodes, those are straight up like the four best, like 30 minute, or not even, it's the best 2 hours of Star Wars we've gotten in, honestly, like since probably the original trilogy. I loved it. Bo-Katan is one of my favorite characters in Clone Wars and even Rebels. And I'm so excited that she's coming to The Mandalorian. Obviously there's rumor. I'm sure you guys have talked about Ahsoka potentially being on Mandalorian when the news came out. So that's kind of a big thing. I know a lot of people are thinking about Temuera Morrison playing Boba Fett. You know, I think Boba Fett's going to be in it. I don't think he's going to take his mask off, though. I think Temuera Morrison's also going to be playing Captain Rex as well. I think we're going to get a whole Rebels thing. And there's actually some big rumors going around that there's possibly an animated sequel to Rebels coming out later this year. Even before The Mandalorian, which could have the likes of Captain Rex, Ahsoka, Sabine, and all those show up. And also then it could tie into Mandalorian Season 2. So I'm just honestly psyched out of my mind for this. Katie Sackhoff is such a badass, and I can't wait to see her play a live-action Bo-Katan. And I'm also excited to see what they can do with Boba Fett. Personally, for me, though, I don't really care for them to bring him back. I would have rather them brought back like Cad Bane or something from Clone Wars, who is a really cool bounty hunter. But Boba Fett and The Mandalorian makes sense. He'll probably get his own spinoff. They'll probably take that movie that they're making and adapt it into a show or something for Disney Plus, because that's the big thing they like to do now.
Griffin, how about you?
I'm super, the second I saw Temuera Morrison returning, I was just like, yes, this is this is amazing. Mainly because it's exactly what Zach said, is exactly what I first thought. I was like, okay, so he can play Boba Fett, but that also means that we can get Captain Rex again, because they're bringing back Ahsoka, and we obviously know the attachment between those two. We saw them in Rebels, and then they, you know, we know that Rex survived to the end of Return of the Jedi. And so, like, it'd be interesting to see them explore someone who has survived two galaxy-changing conflicts, like, what that effect has on a person, and watching, like, comrades die around him. And so, not that they would explore that, but I think that could be something that would be really interesting to see, you know, when we meet Rex or something like that. Katie Sackhoff as Bo-Katan is obviously, that's perfect casting. It'll be cool to see how they bring her back. I love what Dave Filoni is doing. Dave Filoni is taking these shows and he's like, well, you like these guys from Clone Wars? Well, they still have more story to tell. We're going to just integrate them into here. And we saw him do it with Rebels, and now we're going to see him do it with The Mandalorian. I think we're going to get something like really special and interesting. I think people are anticipating that they're going to be in it for like a good chunk of the series.
Like one episode.
Yeah. I think it's only going to be like an episode or two, like a two episode arc, similar to what he did with Clone Wars, where like, you know, two or three episodes were, you know, an arc, and then they moved on to something different. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I think is going to happen here. I'm definitely excited to see that. And I hope with Ahsoka, I hope something happens where like she like helps to train Baby Yoda or something like that. Like that would be really interesting and cool. But I think all of these characters that he's integrating into The Mandalorian is going, it's going to make way for like spinoffs. Like these are the spinoffs that they were talking about, not necessarily the spinoffs from characters in Mandalorian season one.
Well, and what I definitely want from like even bringing in these people, I do want that sequel series to Rebels, but I also just want a pure Ahsoka spinoff, which takes her journey between Clone Wars and Rebels. And then even leading up, I had this epiphany like a couple weeks ago where I was like, obviously we know she's dead. We know she's dead by Rise of Skywalker because of some of the stuff that happens in Rise of Skywalker.
But is she?
That is true. But and I thought about this. I'm like, what if Kylo Ren was the one who ended up killing her off? And in the beginning of Force Awakens, when we see him arrive on that planet, that is... He got the information from Ahsoka from either embedding her mind or even though we know she's very powerful, that he did some force manipulation to get that information out of her and then just executed her. I think it'd actually be really cool. Obviously, there are a lot of these like characters that were like, we don't know where they are, what they were doing. And I'm hoping the Mandalorian and in general other spinoffs can kind of answer these questions for where these characters went.
Yeah.
Yeah. As for me, I have loved all these announcements of characters coming back, and they're the right kind of characters to bring back in my mind. So one of the things I've heard from a bunch of people, got one in the comments said from Headcanon, said I don't want the Mandalorian to do its own thing and not rely on the rest of Star Wars. And I've received that comment from a bunch of people that tweet a bunch of times. From my perspective, I don't want them to keep doing Han Solo stories about, you know, his origin story and relying on the main five characters and talking about the same five events. I don't want it to be that small of a universe, but I also don't want it to be a totally disconnected universe. If we're telling stories right after Return of the Jedi, just years after Return of the Jedi, all these characters from these movies and TV shows are still out there. And so it would make sense that if you're doing bounty hunter adventures with a Mandalorian, that the most famous other Mandalorians would show up along the way. That makes sense. It ties into what's out there. The idea that if we're having Darksaber or Ahsoka Tano, like there's like connective tissue here. If you've got a little Yoda guy that needs to be trained, there's only so many people that you can go to for guidance. And that's the sort of thing that I think those work for me. It just doesn't feel like, oh man, we're just relying on the past. It doesn't feel like pandering. It feels like it's a connected universe. What do you guys think of that? What's your response to the idea that they're relying too much on past Star Wars and wanting it to stand on its own?
I get.
Well, they're. Yeah. Well, oh, or go, yeah. Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. I get like the thought on that. Because some of the videos I've done on this, I get the same comment. I don't like that they're doing this, and that. But I also like to further out this world. That's also what you have to do to like kind of make it feel relatable. You or like feel like it ties in overall in certain aspects. And I think while these aren't, like we said, this isn't going to be Ahsoka is not going to be through the whole season of Mandalorian season two. She's not going to be in it the whole time. And neither will be Boba Fett and sort of things like that. But at the same time, it's the way that there's like interconnected tissues for what it is. Now, if we're wrong and season three, the Mandalorian comes out and it's all about Ahsoka instead of Pedro Pascal's Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, then there's an issue to come about in there. But I feel like these are just supporting casts that add more to it. Plus, a majority of people who watch the Mandalorian don't know who Ahsoka is. A majority of people who watch The Mandalorian don't know who Bo-Katan is. They'll know who Boba Fett is, but they're not going to know who those other characters are. But it could intrigue them to go and look, oh, this character was in this animated show. I should go check that out. Oh, I have kids. Maybe they want to check that show out now. That's how I kind of look at it.
How about you?
Yeah, I was going to say a similar thing to Zach, where it's like most people, most casual fans who are just watching The Mandalorian or whatever, are not familiar with these characters from Clone Wars lore. So it's not like they're taking someone like Han Solo and literally giving him an origin story when he doesn't need one. They're just like integrating characters that would be around during this time.
Exactly.
Into stories during this time. Yeah, exactly what you said. So, yeah, no, this doesn't bother me at all. I think where it could get a little, gimmicky is if who they decide to make spinoffs off of. Like if they decide to make a spinoff off of Boba Fett, obviously they're just cashing in on the fact that it's Boba Fett. Now, I mean, granted, there could be a really interesting story to tell there about a guy who was almost eaten alive and was given a second shot at life. That's potentially interesting, but it seems like Boba Fett's back to his old, you know, bounty hunting tricks from that tease in episode 5 of The Mandalorian season 1. So I don't know if they're really going to go there, but I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. It just I don't want to see any more Solo type of you know, projects. I'm okay with this sort of integration. Let's leave people from the original trilogy, the main players, let's just let them rest now.
And I think that's the key thing of these aren't the A-list. They're not characters that to the mainstream have gotten a bunch of stories. It's characters from an animated show that's beloved by a group of people that would still be out there to make more appearances. Boba Fett, the amount of time we've gotten with him, it's like 12 minutes. And if you're going to bring him back, like, it's not like, oh, he's so played out. Is he really, though? And especially the Rex idea, I think, is way more interesting than Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Boba Fett dead.
Yeah.
I could be fine with that. If he comes back, I can be okay with that. But Rex, that is a very interesting direction to take things. And you can have Boba Fett and Rex, which can then suddenly that doubles down on super interesting in its own way.
Yeah. Especially if they interact, you know, like if they ever come in contact with it, there's like so many interesting things that could happen with that.
Plus even adding there, the conversations that kind of goes about with the Mandalorian himself and Baby Yoda. I mean, his world opened up when this little child came into his life. And now it's, you know, adding in all these other things, you know, it's opening up even more. I mean, the Force at this point in time is kind of a myth to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Then he sees Baby Yoda doing all these weird things and it's like, okay, so it's not a myth. So it kind of opens up a little bit more. And I think Ahsoka is going to give a lot of answers. I think she's going to be the kind of exposition episode that kind of gives what's going on. Who is this? Because I love the first season of Mandalorian. My biggest issue is the story. The story structure for there honestly made no sense. And I know a lot of people have the whole thing, well, it's kind of a Western serialized. Yeah, but at the same time, by the last episode, everything was interconnected. So it's kind of like, I feel like this next season is going to be definitely more connected tissue throughout the whole entire thing with certain arcs. Kind of these two episodes are an arc, these two episodes are an arc, like Griffin was saying.
Well, I think they even should have, instead of doing like three episodes in a row that were standalones, they should have done more of the Clone Wars model, which is do kind of two episode arcs. Like I rewatched the Magnificent Seven episode that with the ATST, and that's like two episodes worth of story where because they're there for a month. But it's crammed into 40 minutes. You go, that could have been a two-episode arc, and they could have balanced out their season a lot better with how they did things. Then hopefully they'll learn that lesson and do kind of these two-episode arcs or three-episode arcs more like.
Well, and that's something you say, is people don't understand. The Mandalorian takes place over a long period of time. It's not a couple days, couple months. I think it's around maybe 2 years. Was it like 2 years or something? Like by the end, like by the eighth episode, it's like 2 years or something. It's like pretty close. It's a long time. So I love what they're doing. I'm just excited like for Star Wars.
Just rewatching that episode. I mean, they're like, it cuts from one thing to the next and they say, oh, we've been here a month, or we made a big mess last month. And it's like, if you miss that one line of dialogue, you miss the fact that a bunch of time just passed in the last 30 seconds. And the whole show, as you mentioned, it's kind of like that. So I don't have no idea what the amount is, but it passes time. And that's probably another issue with the season, is that it doesn't clearly communicate how much time is really passing with some of this. We had a super chat come in. I'm kind of following up talking about Star Wars from Majestic Demon. It says, Zach and Griffin, not for me, do you think they should make a Star Wars movie about the origin of the Jedi and the Sith? Zach, how about you?
I think they were originally planning that with the Game of Thrones creators, and this Taika Waititi one that's coming out. I gut feeling on this one. I think it's either that High Republic thing they're doing with the books and the comics and everything, or it's Old Republic. I really think when you get the writer from 1917 and you get Taika to kind of come on board, I think that's what they're going to focus on. And I think a part of that will be the origins, but at the same time, it's something that do you really want? I'm going to be honest. If anyone's going to touch it, I'd rather Dave Filoni is the one I would want to touch that origin story. I don't want anyone else. Like, I don't want a Kathleen Kennedy touching it. I would rather want Dave Filoni because he's so close and niche with George Lucas. So if anything, I'd want him to touch it. If not, I don't really care. I kind of like the mystery of it.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said about like having that be somewhat of a mystery. I think if they do a film set in the Old Republic, or whatever, the High Republic, whatever they're calling it, that era, they can kind of explore the origins without explicitly like making a movie about it, which I think is more interesting to me than just straight up just doing a movie about the origin of these two, you know, force wielders, basically. And I think they could do it in like, you know, some sort of like, this is going to sound weird, but like in an Indiana Jones fashion where like they're going to like uncover like artifacts or something. Like it's kind of, they, as they go and uncover stuff or they go on an adventure, they find out more about the past or whatever, or like through certain interactions with Jedi masters or whatever. I think that's the way you kind of dive into the origin, not like just making a movie centered around it.
Even Maz Kanata is a very interesting character. She's obviously seen a lot, which that's another character that I think is rumored for Mandalorian season 2. Wouldn't be surprised if we did get her in there because she has been around for so long.
Yeah.
But she's one that has a couple interactions during Force Awakens where she knows a lot more than we know. And I think, you know, characters like that where it's subtly placed to make you intrigued, be like, well, I kind of want to know more about that. And, you know, there's areas to play around with it, but I don't think a straight up movie that's all about that. Now, if we get an Indiana Jones film where he goes and finds an artifact, like, you know, maybe he finds an artifact of C-3PO's face and it's just a whole pretty, it shows that weird, it's a different generation of that Earth. So,
yeah.
I think the reason he specified you guys is he's someone on Patreon, so he already asked me this question in Patreon live stream last Saturday, but you guys didn't hear that answer. And basically, I'm game for it. Basically, I'm game for something at a different time period.
Yeah.
Different ways they could do that, but I'm interested in moving away from this single window of time that we've been in.
Yeah.
Because you have this universe where you can go way far back, you can go way far away, and I want to do that. I think that's one of the reasons that The Mandalorian is kind of working, even though it's in that same time period, is that it's just far enough away from the Empire and all this stuff that we know, while not being too distant, that it's interesting. It ties in, but it can stand on its own to tell stories. And if you go back and you tell a story about the birth of Jedi and Sith, once again, it's connected. So it's interesting. It has that, it informs things, but it's also distant enough that they can tell their own story. So I would be game for that. Real quick, I had one more Mandalorian type question. Tim asks, do you guys think Baby Yoda should grow up during the series or just stay the way he is? I think with the way they've set up the show with him already being 50 years old, I don't think he really can grow up too much. They're just showing him growing so slowly. I don't think that there's much you can do to have him grow up unless the series takes place over 50 years.
Yeah, and by that point, I mean, the Mandalorian will be dead by old age.
Right.
I mean, you know, like, again, it goes to the interesting question. Where is he in the world? I you know what I mean? Like, we've seen the sequel series. He's nowhere to be found in there. Is that how they cloned Palpatine? Who knows? Who knows what they're going to do with all that?
Well, I have read the book.
Oh.
Rise of Skywalker. So I can tell you how they clone Palpatine. It already had cloning stuff set up. But, it doesn't actually inform all that much. It's like, oh, yeah, there's a clone. So, all right, moving along to our next topic of the day. The creator of Deadpool had some less than positive things to say about Deadpool's future in cinema. He said, I blame Marvel, but that nothing has happened yet. They're the reason it isn't happening. Whatever conundrum or didn't fit in your master plan, I just commission it, okay? Commission it. You know, Frank Franzetta will still be around. You would say, Frank, paint for me. So basically, the creator of Deadpool thinks that there's a goose egg chance that we're getting another Deadpool, getting a Deadpool 3. So he makes these comments. My quick answer to it is that this is a guy that seems frustrated that we're not getting progress. A character that he created was making buku's money at the box office, loved by people, Zach, you being one of them.
Yeah.
And then they got acquired by Disney, and then the brakes got slammed on because he put Deadpool under the Disney brand. That's how I read the comments. He's a guy that's frustrated that they're not moving quicker on something that made a lot of money and probably made him a lot of money. Zach, what do you make of the comments?
I mean, as someone, I saw the first Deadpool in theaters probably like 25 times. Like, I love the first one. Second one, definitely on rewatches, I don't ever care to rewatch it again. I love Rob Liefeld. I mean, my mom's his wife used to be my mom's best friend in high school, so it's a fun little story in there. And my mom like didn't even know that who she was dating and stuff until like a couple years ago. I was like, "Oh, mom, this is Rob Liefeld. He directed." And I showed her a picture, and she goes, "Oh, that's my best friend from high school." The thing with Rob Liefeld, though, is the fact that I just, you know, I really want a Deadpool 3. I think we're going to get one, but he's not in the studios with Marvel every day talking. Like, if anyone knows, it's Ryan Reynolds. And if you notice, he's pretty coy about it. I mean, like, they're going to make another one. They're not going to not make one, and it's not going to be under the Disney brand. It'll be under Fox. They're going to do what is it now? Searchlight Pictures. Is that what it's called? The new logo?
It's 20th Century Studios.
20th Century Studios. Yeah. It's going to be called 20th Century Studios. They're going to throw it under there. And maybe they do interconnect Deadpool in a small way, like how they interconnected the X-Men universe. There's too much money. Disney knows money. They know Deadpool makes money. If they do anything else around it, if they change it to a PG-13, if they change it to this, they know it can affect them as a company and in general as in the movies. They're going to keep letting them make what they want to do as long as they are good movies. And I think Kevin Feige and Ryan are probably trying to figure out a way to make it work while at the same time also. And I think a lot of it's just timing. I mean, I really believe if this virus didn't have happened, we probably – this summer, I think we would have gotten news at Comic-Con about what they were doing with Deadpool. I think we would have gotten some more things with teases to him. I still think if he's going to cameo in the MCU, he will cameo in the Multiverse of Madness. I think that's the easiest way to cameo him. He's going through different multiverses real fast. You see Deadpool, done, deal.
I don't really take anything that Rob Liefeld says that seriously. It's to a different extent. He's kind of like the Todd McFarlane, where he'll just like talk out of his ass about a character he created, but he really has no say in it. The only difference is Todd McFarlane is supposedly making his Spawn movie with Jamie Foxx. Whether or not that actually happens, who knows? I mean, Rob Liefeld can talk about all he wants about the character or whatnot, but like at the end of the day, he's not making the movies. He's not even involved in production of the movies. He's just and I think the thing that kind of that I find hilarious is he's using this analogy of like creating comic books to making films. And it's like I see where you're coming from, Rob, but they're two completely different processes. You can't just like go to your buddy who's like an illustrator or comic book artist and be like, "Oh, hey man, you want to like kind of collab on this thing?" Like comics is a little bit, I mean, you can do this with film, but when you're talking about like a multi-million dollar property that's owned by the Mouse House, that's, you can't like do that on a smaller scale. Whereas like Rob can go to his friend and be like, "Oh, hey, let's make this little comic book run of whatever." So it's like, yeah, I don't know. It just because it hasn't happened yet, there's been no announcement yet, doesn't mean it's not going to happen. And if it's going to happen, Rob Liefeld probably isn't going to know about it until like we all know about it. So.
Which we all know. The second they announce it, he's going to tweet out. He's going to Instagram post about it. You know, he's going to freak out. Deadpool 3 is happening finally. And we're like, yeah, we knew it was going to happen. Like,
yeah, at this point, he's just like a glorified fan of the films as much as we are. I mean, granted, he has a little bit more attachment to it, but like he really has no part of it. So I don't know. I don't really take his comments with any like credibility or credence or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, when you look at it, I don't even think Spider-Man 3 is actually officially announced yet. You know, like the release date is out there, but like the cast, everything in there isn't even announced.
They don't even have a title.
No, so Deadpool 3, I mean, it's coming. These scripts get written. This is like I guarantee, like, as much as like everything's been shut down, they're still planning. You can write scripts at home. Like, you can still plan and develop stuff at home. So I think this is more of a, he's more of just, it's been what, 3 years since Deadpool 2? We need another Deadpool film.
Well, in his longer quotes, when he kind of elaborates on it, he goes, "You know, the first movie came out in 2016, and the second one came out in 2018. Two more years have passed, and there's nothing planned." And so, just inside of that, you kind of hear a person that they're just eager for it to happen, and they're not thinking logically of like, right, they did a quick turnaround, made a lot of money. A lot of people weren't quite as happy with that second one. Some people loved it. Me and you seem to have been pretty disappointed with the second one.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
But then there was this gigantic acquisition, like this huge acquisition that changed the whole game of how it would get made. And so he's talking about it as if Marvel is mismanaging the character and, oh, it doesn't fit into your plan. Just go and make it. It's like they've made it an enormous amount of money because they have a plan, a good plan.
Well, they're very good. The other thing is Disney hasn't done anything with the Fox properties yet. They're just trying to get the ones that were made out already. I mean, Avatar, James Cameron's doing his own thing in the Atlantic Ocean at this point. It doesn't even matter. But it's like they haven't touched the X-Men. They haven't touched the Fantastic Four yet. They haven't touched Deadpool yet. And Planet of the Apes is already kind of getting moved along with this new director involved for the franchise. So it's like they haven't touched anything yet.
In fact,
in Arizona, two different reps run Fox and Disney, and they still run both. They don't. They're not combining them or anything.
Yeah,
so it's still two separate things. So
I'm still not on the Fox lists here in Austin, or I'm not. I'm on one of the two Fox lists that they have, but I'm on all the Disney lists, and so it's they haven't figured
it really
out yet.
It's really weird. I mean. And that's the thing. They've combined certain things for the streaming software, or the streaming stuff, obviously, with Hulu. But besides that, I mean, they're still very separate. And I think that's what Disney wants. Disney just wanted the IP. I mean, that's 100% what they wanted. They wanted the IP and a separate studio.
All right. Moving along to I guess we have two more subjects of the day. We had a couple more pieces of information given to us about Avatar 2 through 1,000. First one being that James Cameron saying basically, we're going to be delayed. We think we're good to go. We're going to hit our release date. So while everything else is being delayed, he thinks we're good to go, which is incredibly ironic given how many delays these movies have already had. And then now that everything else is getting delayed, he's like, no, why would we be delayed? We're fine. And then the other piece to it is that we kind of already knew this, but once again, it was confirmed that rumored that the budget for these four sequels is $1 billion. So those two pieces of information aren't terribly interesting to me, but any chance I get to talk about my frustrations with these Avatar sequels, I like to rant about these Avatar sequels. So let's do that for a little bit. So James Cameron should be one of the great directors of all time. In a certain senses, he is. But in your lifetimes, he's only put out two movies. In the gap between when I was born and when each of you were born, he put out like six or seven movies. And just it blows my mind that James Cameron disappeared to Pandora to make Avatar movies for the last 20 years. Why?
Pandora's real. It's real. He's actually going there. Like, is it that? That's why it looks so beautiful.
Yeah. Is it bad that I really want the second one to just bomb so that he can stop making the rest of them? Like, do other original whatevers? Like, oh man.
I mean, I'm in the camp. I think the second one's gonna make so much money. Their second one's gonna kill.
I think they're all gonna make. They're all gonna be very successful.
They all at least gotta make what $800 million to make its budget.
Okay, so here's the question though: do you think Avatar sequels could overtake Avengers Endgame as the biggest movie of all time?
No.
Yes.
No. Maybe the last Avatar sequel, if it's like this grand epic, like beloved, series of movies. But no, I don't think so.
I think if there's a possibility. Maybe not, like you said, I don't think Endgame, but I think it could get really damn close. Just for the fact of there are so many people I talk to that aren't in the comic book films that some of them, frankly, don't even care about superhero films anymore. But I mentioned that they're making an Avatar 2 and they get hyped out of their mind.
Who are these people?
I have to ask the same question.
Just general movie audience, like a majority of my work, like they do not go to the movies. A majority of my work does not go to the movies. But when I mention the likes of an Avatar, it's like the biggest thing to them in the world. You know what the biggest superhero property I've heard at my work is, besides, I wouldn't even say Avengers, it's Venom. They were the people that went and made Venom $900 million or whatever it made. So I really do think there is a chance on Avengers or Avatar making a ton of money. Plus, I think the second one's going to be good. I don't love the first one. I love the world, but James Cameron, he makes movies and they're just, I mean, Terminator 1, the Terminator 2. I don't know. I think he's really, he knows what to do with the sequel.
I think that's the factor. You've got the two sequels he's done are like two of the best sequels ever.
Yeah.
Made. They might be my two favorite sequels of all time. So right there you go, man, his track record on sequels is good. And then you look at his track record of his last two movies, you go, holy cow, both of them just insanely dominated the box office. So if you look at his track record, you go, man, if there's somebody that's got a track record to just blow our minds with how this thing's going to do, it's James Cameron. The flip side to it, I just have such a hard time seeing it because, like, to me, besides Piranha 2, which isn't really a James Cameron movie, Avatar is my least favorite James Cameron movie. Now, it's still good. Like, I'm not hating on it, but, you know, even The Abyss and Titanic, like all of these other movies, I like more than I like Avatar because the story to it was just so much like Dances with Wolves, Pocahontas, Last Samurai, Ferngully. It was just too much of a familiar story just with amazing visuals. And so it's also a story that's such a clear template story that you don't get to the end of it and go, oh man, when this happens, I mean, I just have no clue what the sequels are even going to be. He's like, oh, we're going to go underwater because, of course, James is going to go underwater. But like, I have no clue where the story goes four more times. Like, I just can't get super excited or like understand how we're going to get to 3 billion when I have no idea what this thing's going to be. But he does have a great track record. Griffin, what are you trying to say?
Hey, well, fast breaking news. New Mutants has a release date.
Oh, does it?
Yep. It took Venoms. I think it took Venoms. 8/28/20. Is that Venom's old one or no?
No. Venom was in October.
Okay, so yep, there you go. So 8/28/20.
Wow, New Mutants releases the day after my birthday. What a great present.
That's a great present, man.
It is a great. I actually am really excited for that. Back on Avatar, it's like, yeah, I kind of go with what you're saying, but like that not having a direction and whatnot. It's like he's even bringing back like Stephen Lang, who is just a military just fanatic in the first one, who was just uber violent and died. He's found a way to bring him back, and I'm just like, I don't think that that's really necessary. Like, why are we doing this? Like, it's just
Sigourney Weaver's coming back too.
Yeah, but like that almost makes more sense to me, not only because it's Sigourney Weaver, but because I guess like the character. But like it's almost like the stakes of the first movie or the consequences of the first movie just have like there's no reason for it. It's just like, well, all these people are going to be back. So
and that's what I think frustrates me with kind of even everything they're telling us about it. It's like, oh, we're going underwater. Yeah, well, we're going to bring back Stephen Lang and Sigourney Weaver. And it's all like the superficial stuff that you're like, but what's the movie? Like you're pitching it on the gimmicks. You're pitching it on all the side stuff. You're not pitching it on actually how am I going to be invested in the story. And especially when the gimmicks are like, let's bring back Stephen Lang, that does not excite me. That don't even understand why that would be that's a negative to me. Like, ooh.
Well, Sigourney Weaver too. She's coming back. I mean, everyone is coming back from that very first one.
So, man, that's and I guess it's just spitball brainstorming what they could be doing with how much digital technology they're always trying to blow our minds. And with where de-aging is at, there's all kinds of potential that between these four movies, we're going prequel, sequel, sidequel. We're doing all of it at the same time. And I think in that, maybe there's some ways that you could do some stuff. There's very, you know, all kinds of stuff you wanted to do back on Earth. So there's a bunch of things where you can expand it. Mm-hmm. But tell me about some of that stuff.
It's interesting.
As opposed to, just telling me who's coming back on these things.
Yeah, give us that first trailer.
Yes. And that's where people keep asking, hey, are you excited for Avatar 2? No. First off, because it just keeps getting delayed, 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 delayed. So there's a side to it of like, I'm not going to believe it's coming out until I see a trailer. Until I see something, it just doesn't feel real. That's number one. Number two, because I don't know the story, I just don't get what the movie is. Number three, I'm just so frustrated and that we lost James Cameron to this world.
I know.
That is to me just so very frustrating that that's something that happened.
But we could be saying that and then it comes out and it blows us away. I mean, he could hear the complaints about the first one and say, I'm going to show you.
Man, I love to be proven wrong in those ways. If he can surprise me and make me go, wow, I was skeptical of Avatar 2 for 10 years, and Avatar 4 is my favorite movie of all time, and Avatar 5 is even better. I mean, maybe it would be amazing. That'd be incredible if that were to play out. But it's just tough to get excited until I see that drug. Okay, final little subject of the day. New movie Capone came out. I have not seen it. I haven't seen Capone yet. It's the new movie from Josh Trank. He directed Chronicle, became one of Hollywood's hottest new young directors. So they hired him to do a new adaptation of Fantastic Four. They called it Fantastic Four. They hired him for Star Wars. I guess he was going to do like a Boba Fett movie. And then something went down, and he suddenly became not so popular in Hollywood anymore, and people thought it was kind of crazy there for a little bit. Fantastic, not well received, and not a complete movie. Like, whatever we got was this bizarre mishmash of stuff. So here we are 4 years later, 5 years later, however many years it has been, and he has a new movie starring Tom Hardy, Capone. I haven't seen it. Each of you have seen it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You guys could give your quick thoughts on it.
I didn't hate it. I kind of went in expecting to not like it, but I was also really hopeful. I think more of the thing of this film, I appreciate the vision that Josh Trank went for. And, you know, I don't think it's the most memorable thing I've watched. And I was actually pretty much in for the movie and what was going on until, can I just say the one thing? Tom Hardy pretty much poops his pants through the whole movie. Like, he poops his pants like three times throughout the whole movie. And the first two times was like, whatever.
That's the big thing that I saw on Twitter.
Yeah.
Was learning that there's a lot of pants pooping.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things in movies, but interesting choice.
Yeah. The third time, though, was the time that I said, I don't get it. It totally sucked me out for the whole entire third act. And I was just like, why did you have him? Like, the third time, there's an audible like sound that just sounds like it's out of like an like what an Austin Powers movie.
It doesn't even matter.
It's such an intense scene, and it's supposed to be an intense scene, and then he just rips ass.
It's really funny because he's being interrogated by like the FBI with his lawyer next to him, and like this guy's like asking him a bunch of questions, and he just zooms in on his face like this, and it just like he freezes up, and then you just hear the sound of him shitting his pants, and it's
so bad.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And then everyone's just all going like this, and it's like, what?
I legitimately went from a B to a C+, and I was, and a lot of that was because I liked the movie, but that moment like completely took me out of the moment.
It's,
and in general, the whole movie, like the whole third act, didn't matter to me at all at that point because of that one moment. Like, that moment killed it. And you know what though? I know he like marketed this as his being his final cut, or he get final cut. He must have fought for that. He had to have fought for that to be in the film. Because the first two times are kind of subtle when it happens. That was not subtle. That was not subtle.
Yeah, that one.
Griffin, your more weird general thoughts on it besides pants pooping?
Oh yeah. Oh no, I think it's terrible. The main reason why is like based off of what we're talking about right now from the pants pooping stuff. Like, you think it's going to be the kind of movie that's like laughably bad. It's not laughably bad. It's just,
it's actually depressing.
Unbelievably miserable to sit through. It is just one of the most senile, gross, mean-spirited like films I think I've seen in a very long time. I mean, it's basically just self-destruction porn, masochistic and stuff like that. It's just the thing that bothers me about it So we have a character here. We all know Al Capone. Obviously, he's not a very likable person, but in a movie where he's your main character, you have to try and have the audience like empathize with him or sympathize with him or his family. Yeah, in some way. And there is no attempt to do that at all. And so we're just watching this guy who's basically in purgatory be tortured the entire time with no sense of salvation at the end of the film. No reason to root for him. It gets really repetitive and monotonous and it drags on. And like, I checked out like halfway through the movie and there's supposed to be this like connection between Capone and his family, this whole, you know, motive about, oh, well, he was a bad person, but like, he's got a good family. And you don't really see that connection. And I think there's like the thing about the movie is like, I see why Trank wrote it, because there were parallels to his own sort of life about an individual who is caught between who's kind of blurred the lines between what's his truth and what's legend or mythologized or whatever. And I think there is an interesting thing to say there, and there's an interesting movie to make, but at the end of the day, he doesn't really say anything. And we're just watching Tom Hardy poop his pants, like hide away $10 million, which is apparently like a plot point in the film, but it really has no bearing on anything. And it just kind of like spins its rudders and is just, so, so miserable to watch.
Yeah. All of those reasons, I was a little bit too skeptical on the front end to like pay $20 to review a movie. So I couldn't justify doing that, especially with all of the obvious reasons. And then I just started hearing the reviews of it. I was like, I think I'll sit this one out.
I'm going to be honest, though. I mean, I'm kind of still excited for the next Josh Trank film. I like his vision. I like his I just don't like him as a writer. I don't like his writing for this film. I think that was my biggest issue with the writing. And it just felt like, and I was listening to an interview with him, how he was saying how like Tom Hardy loved the script. So maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's just a better writer and
the director.
I mean, I don't really know, because we've only seen three films from him from now. I love Chronicle. Fantastic Four, we're not even going to discuss. And then Capone, I like the vision more than anything else in that film. So it's interesting. I mean, we got a new film finally, so...
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, but honestly, Sean, I can't see you liking this movie in the slightest. No. I think you'll be very off put by it.
I don't think you'll finish it if you bought it.
Yeah, that too.
My wife to watch it with me, a good family film. Eh?
Yeah, I mean, he is a family man in the film.
That's true. So. All right, I'm sold. All right, we're about to head into the Q&A portion. So if you're watching live right now, be sure to kind of throw your questions into the chat. But one last thing for the audio version of this. What are you guys watching right now? And what do you recommend other people check out? Zach, what are you watching? What do you recommend people check out this weekend?
Oh, that's tough. No. Well, I'm actually really excited for Scoob that comes out Friday. I pre-ordered it. Because I'm just a huge Scooby-Doo fan, so I'm just curious to see how it goes. When it comes to streaming, though, I can't emphasize enough, please, if you haven't seen Ozark yet, please go watch Ozark, because Ozark Season 3 is probably some of the best TV I've watched since Breaking Bad.
So. Griffin, how about you? What are you watching? What do you recommend this weekend?
Yeah, I just got my screener for Scoob in, so I'm going to check that out. I'm actually, similar to Zach, really, really excited for that. I think it'll be a fun time, so everyone should just go watch Scoob.
So speaking of Scoob, I've been watching the live action Scooby-Doo movies with my kids the last couple of nights. And it's interesting now because James Gunn wrote them. Two live action ones, James Gunn wrote the script for them. And I was having this thought, like if they announced today, James Gunn is going to write two upcoming Scooby-Doo movies, everyone would be like, whoa, this is crazy. But that actually already happened in the past. It's interesting the way that we kind of think differently about past things as opposed to future things. But And you can definitely see a little bit of his cynicism in those movies with the way that the stories play out with them. I've also been watching a whole bunch of action movies, the Mission Impossible, John Wick, Jason Bourne, Lethal Weapon, for a video I'm doing later this month, 31 on 31, where take 7 different action franchises and then rank them all together. So I've been having fun watching all these action movies recently. So all this throwback stuff that I absolutely love. And then, yeah, I'll be watching Scoob with you guys this weekend as well. So everyone else, check it out. Hopefully it's as good as we're hoping it's going to be. With that, we're going to close out the audio version. Wherever you're listening to this audio podcast, be sure to leave that rating, that review. Thank you so much for listening to this. And if you want to be a part of the live stream, they're normally on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. I announce it in advance which day we're going to do it, and normally schedule so you can kind of find it, join in on the chat, have some fun being part of the community, and keep talking movies and nerdy stuff too much.